Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
Jillian, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
This is so exciting.
Excellent. So to start off today, I'd like to hear more about you and your beginnings. Let's start off with, if somebody asks you what it is that you do, how do you answer them?
I would answer, I am a singer, songwriter, activist. I am an internationally touring musician in the band The Bergamot, and we make indie folk rock music.
Excellent. Okay, so let's get into the music side of it,
because yeah,
that's something I'm really interested in hearing more about. It's been a while since I've really been into music. I was much more, because I was in a band back in my younger days. I was in a very small South Bend, Indiana band back in
the day. Wait, what did you play?
I was the bass player for a bit, and then I was the lead singer for a little bit.
Oh, whoa. Multiply talented. Okay.
I think talented is definitely a very nice way to describe that. We weren't bad. We just made a lot of noise, and it was good. We played a lot at Higher Ground and a few other
places. Yes, Higher Ground Coffee downtown.
Yes.
Oh my God. Wait, I wonder if you would have known my husband. He went by like Nate Hoff. Ben, do you remember him? Oh, he went to Marion, but.
Maybe.
Gosh, I don't know. He played a lot of Higher Ground. That'd be so funny if there was like a night where like you guys all did something randomly or.
It's very.
I don't know.
Well, it depends. Wait, I was doing that back in, was it 90, between like 98 and 2000, somewhere around there.
Oh my God.
I spent a lot of time with, so I think actually we have a mutual friend named Josh, and I forget his last name now. He's now in the band called The Rutabaga, but before he had
yes!
a band called Space and Noise Productions.
Wait, yeah, The Rutabaga, yeah, no, Josh, we know them.
Yeah, Hensley, yeah.
They're amazing.
So back when Josh's first band, Space Noise Productions, my band and I used to open for them, and we would play a lot of the same places they would. So I basically followed around Josh's band and played at the same places they would.
That is, wow. So you're coattailing before coattailing was an industry term.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they had a much cooler band and a bigger sound than we did.
Oh my God.
So yeah, so we just kind of opened for them or would follow them around and then, you know, get gigs in between there. So yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting. So my husband and I, when I was 15 and he was 17, we both met at Marion through a mutual friend at, remember the Barnes & Noble bookstore, like by Grape Road, like the big one?
Yes.
Back in the, okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. Before they moved it by the mall now.
Yeah. So we met there on like a random Saturday night, which like kind of indicates how nerdy I guess we were. We easily could have been doing like other like terrible things in South Bend, but we were like going to read books at like a Saturday night.
Nothing wrong with that. I also was someone who spent a lot of time at Barnes & Noble.
My God, loved it. Yeah. And so that's how we met. And, he was like, when we met originally, I was like, oh, I feel like I've seen, you know, you're like a musician or in high school. You know, I was younger, 2 years younger, but he was a senior. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, I've seen you sing in church because we went to a Catholic high school. So like we had known each other. And then I was like, oh, this is crazy that we're meeting right now because my mom just gave me her 1970s guitar and I need lessons. And I know you play guitar. So that night he came over to my house, Well, we went to Rocco's, which is an amazing Italian pizza place in South Bend. Mm-hmm. And then after that, he came over to my house with a bunch of his friends, and my mom like got to meet all of them. That was like her thing, like, hey, you can all hang out late, but you have to come back here and meet everybody. So that was like the first night we ever hung out, and that was 13 years ago, and we've never stopped hanging out.
That's a really cool origin story.
Right? Isn't it crazy? Yeah. And he, every week he'd come to my house. He lived on the south side. I was on the north side. So it was like Romeo and Juliet, you know, the other side of the tracks. And he'd come and give me guitar lessons. Mm-hmm. I think it was like the 11th guitar lesson. So we were weeks in. And I think he kind of was like, hey, he's like, do you want to go get like a milkshake or something? And I was like, yeah, I do want to get a milkshake with you.
Please tell me you went to Steak and Shake for that milkshake.
We did! Oh my God, we did!
This is the most Indiana conversation I've had in a long time.
Oh my God, you know exactly where it is. It's the one on the corner by the bowling alley.
Yes, I know. I have been to that Steak and Shake many times after a busy night in South Bend. Yep.
That's the only thing to do. In South Bend, there's only, you go to that Steak and Shake, you go to Barnes & Noble, you go to the mall. Like, what else is there to do? You go, like, tip cows in the cornfield, mm-hmm. like, or you play music.
Exactly, play music. You're right. And after a certain amount of time, the mall's closed, so you can't do that anymore.
No, you can't.
So you have to do something else. Steak, oh my God, yes. Steak, I spent so many nights at Steak and Shake.
Yes, I feel like when we were like having our first like split milkshake, you're like sitting in your car, like probably next to us or something.
I probably was. Probably was like two booths over, describing some kind of new band that had just come out. So what was it? Probably the late 90s. I was really into the Pavement and Pixies at that time, and I was a little bit late to the game with that. So I probably was on some kind of rant about how amazing the new Pavement album was. Or something. Yeah. Or Radiohead.
Like the fact that we can talk about that, it's so rare to go into these like Indiana conversations because we live in Brooklyn now.
Okay.
Super in Greenpoint, which is about 17 minutes away from Times Square, but it's a really vibrant, creative neighborhood, which is awesome.
That is awesome. I used to live in Brooklyn years ago. Mm-hmm. I lived there in 2008.
Oh, nice.
2008, 2009, right after grad school.
North moved, or middle? Brooklyn.
I was in the Park Slope area.
That's a really nice area.
I don't know.
It's like blowing up. Yeah, oh, yeah. It's good.
It was the fancy place of Brooklyn when I was there in 2008, and it was like the more expensive area of Brooklyn. But it was but it was beautiful.
It's beautiful. Right? Yeah. Brownstones.
Mm-hmm. It was very, very, very nice time to be there momentarily.
Oh, yeah.
Before you had met your husband and been involved in playing guitar, what did you do before that? Like, did you have some kind of training that you did, or were you just, you mentioned you were singing in church. So tell me about that background.
Okay. So the first time I ever remember singing live ever, it was one of the situations where my music teachers were always pushing me into it. I was not the type of child to be like, oh, pick me. Mm-hmm. I was actually like, please don't pick on me. Please don't choose me. And they would always be like, oh yeah, Jillian, oh, we got a little solo, but we got a nice solo for you front and center. I'm like, so I had massive stage fright. I was, very introverted, which is funny now cause I'm more extroverted, but I still have introverted tendencies. And so I started my first, solo. I was five. And I sang in front of like the whole school. And I just remember being like, okay, just like focus on the words. You'll get through this type thing. And I did it and I loved it, but I was still real hesitant about singing in front of people because I didn't think I had a very good voice. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a teacher who really believed in me and encouraged me. And when I was like 9 and 10 into like my earlier years, they kept saying, hey, you know, keep singing or keep extending your range and I'll help you. And, then I sang like one of my favorite solos as a child was like singing, I sang Yesterday by the Beatles. Ooh, yeah. And, it just went really well. And like, I started being like, okay, I really love this. So I started singing a lot. And then, by the time I got into high school, I had heard there was like a choir, and I was like, well, you know, maybe like I'll go up to the director after one of the masses after everyone leaves. And I did. And I like took out like a crumpled piece of paper that I'd been like carrying, of a song called, it was an Amy Grant song called El Shaddai. And I went up to the choir instructor and I just said, hi, my name's Jillian. I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God, it's like, this is a bad idea. This is a bad idea. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking to him. And then I was like, hey, I was like, hey, I have this, you know, the song, I think it could be cool. And he was like, oh, just, do you want to try out now? I'll just play the piece. And I was like, okay. I was like, oh, this was a bad idea. And then I sang it and he loved it. And the next week I was singing in front of the, all of my peers, which was so terrifying. And then for like the rest of my high school career, I was known as El Shaddai Girl. I still have not lived that down. And I will have like super fans come to our shows now and be like after the show, like, hey, can you sign this? And can you sing me El Shaddai? Like still. Like what?
Wow. So do you ever pull that out as an encore piece then? Maybe you should pull that out as an encore piece.
One time on, so we just did a 50 state tour called the Unity Collective Tour this year. And at one of the shows, there was a super fan there who wanted it so badly that I did sing like 30 seconds of an acapella.
Wow.
And so I was like, okay, maybe that'll be my like, you know, when the Bergamot's all said and done, I'm in retirement, I'll go on like the El Shaddai tour. So, yeah.
I think it's a good idea. It could be exactly the reinvention of things.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm just like, you know, getting really spiritual and like El Shaddai, Erkam Kana Adonai, some Jewish script.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Thank you. Oh, man.
Okay, so you had your training and basically in church and with the choir directors, that where you kind of got your formalized training from then?
I mean, yeah, I would say like my trick was I would go home from school every day and I would emulate my favorite singers of all time.
Okay.
And it sounded probably terrible at points for sure. But I just go in my room, shut the door, and I'd like listen to anyone from Aretha Franklin, Nora Jones, Joni Mitchell, Eva Cassidy. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She, oh my God. She died young from cancer, but this lady, I swear she's an angel. Her voice is literally perfect.
Oh, wow.
So I would just sing over and over for hundreds and hundreds of hours. So I was training based off of kind of this emulation thing, which was good because I was like listening and I'd pause it and I'd sing it and I'd record myself and then I'd play it back and I take video to see, okay, what do I look like when I'm doing this for presentation? So I really was self-taught, but, by the time I got into, I would say maybe I was like 16. I was like, man, I really want to go to a voice instructor. So I went for maybe 10 lessons and it was really good. And I moved a little bit forward and then I just kept playing out. And, my husband Nathaniel and I, then we were just like hanging out. We were just friends. But you know, we're husband wife now, so that definitely escalated to something more than that. But we actually started playing small gigs at this place in Mishawaka. So everything has a humble beginning. 13 years ago, he would go into these like restaurants where they had like an additional auxiliary room. There is this one called Francesco's. And there was a top room that was like kind of like an attic, but like, you know, people could have like parties up there. And he was like, look, he talked to the owner and said, I will, this is the entrepreneur spirit of kind of both of us coming through. He's like, I will bring out, I'll bring out 100 people and they will, and we will buy pizza and you'll get all the money from that. Cause he's like, you know, to help boost your sales and we'll play a show and we'll take the cover and we'll buy tons of pizza and they'll buy other stuff. So we started doing those shows and they were so slammed out that no one could get upstairs. And that like the owners were happy that the son, there was like a young Italian son and he like loved it because no one was using that space. But like this, the older gentleman who owned it for like 50 years, he was like, no, no. He's like, they need to give us more money. And the son, seriously, we were like 15 and 17. Mm-hmm. And the son was like, no, no, dad, like it's going really well. Like they're bringing in a lot of money. We weren't using that space. He's like, more money, more money. So we did that all the way until we graduated and went to college. And that was like super successful. So we, you know, and I'd help in like promoting. So we'd like make flyers and hand them out all over school and like post them up. And, you know, we'd make, these burn CDs of like demos and like give them to all our friends and playlists. And I think that's honestly the beginning of our, you know, entrepreneurial spirit. It was always there and we're always kind of hustling or, you know, making stuff and selling that in the lockers or.
Yeah, well, because I also remember those days and when I was in a really terrible band, but it was, you know, you had the idea of, okay, so we're going to get together and play music and great, you know, we'll get this. So, you know, our place was, we go to the Higher Ground coffee shop all the time and you thought in the early stages that, okay, so if we just play there, that suddenly all these magical people will show up and pay us money to listen to you because the Higher Ground, you know, the gatekeeper said, yes, you guys can play here because you're not that terrible. And we realized really on that, oh, yeah, you also have to get people there because no one's just going to show up to this random coffee shop in South Bend and listen to these people.
No.
So, yeah, I remember doing printing all these flyers and.
Yep. Like burning CDs and. Wait, Facebook didn't exist. Twitter didn't exist. Instagram. No, social media was like this. You had your rotary phone in your house kitchen. Yes. You memorized your friends' numbers. Like you'd call. I still remember my best friend's numbers in my head. I can call their house right now because that's how many times I called. But you know, So like, I think like the big thing is, especially being someone young and you know, growing up in Indiana where it's you know, really it's farmers and a few. Especially back then, it's changed a lot. South Bend's changing, but back then there was like. Mm-hmm. One, you know, two coffee shops, Lula's Cafe, Uncommon Ground, Francesco's, we'd like made our own scene. But, you know, it's crazy what you can, if you put your mind to something and are like super fearless about it, you're like, yeah, we're going to do it. Like what you can actually accomplish.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And that's, I think that's really creative what you guys did with Francesco's. That's really clever. We weren't that clever back then. We were still confined to, although we did play a couple bowling alleys and skate, I remember playing this skating rink in, I think, Evansville.
What? Really?
Yeah, it was, they closed it down and they let bands play there at night. So we played with four other bands in the middle of these cornfields in the middle of nowhere. But it still was a lot of fun though. But
that's
there was a
super
bunch
cool.
of people who showed up at midnight on a Friday. To this middle of this skating rink in the cornfields. Like, yeah.
That's such an Indiana story. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You don't get that in like, yeah, that's hilarious.
So when you and your husband, did you form your band before you went to college or were you just kind of just two people hanging out playing music together? Were you officially the Bergamount before you went to college or was that an after college thing?
No, so that was an after college piece. When we were in high school, we just actually our art teacher, Mrs. Gunty, I have to give her so much credit. She had both of us, and she knew that we were both artists. And even though he was like giving lessons, like we'd never written anything together, but she like every week, like relentlessly, and she's like this joyful, wondrous woman. She just like grab us in the hallway and be like, you guys need to write a song together. And it was like so awkward because they're like, oh, we're still like, you know, hanging out. But like, and she's like, no, you have to write a song. There was a big competition called Project Excel. Every high school in Indiana is submitting. We need you to be like our people. Mm-hmm. And so she asked like 4 weeks in a row. And just to shut her up, we wrote a song together and we made it to the top 10 of state and got to perform it live. Wow. Our first song we ever wrote together. So we performed it live for like a huge panel. We were both so nervous. Like, and we were dressed like 70-year-olds. Like we had no style. The photos from that are probably, I hope one day when we're on Ellen, like those are the photos they show to the world because they are so bad. <It's>, they're terrible. Or like that plus like our prom pictures. Those are pretty good too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we started songwriting in 2003 And we've been writing songs together ever since. We've released, oh my gosh, many albums now. Like, I get, well, so the first album we ever did was actually a Christmas album. And usually people, like, when they're on their way out of the music industry, they do a Christmas album.
Yeah.
But we started with the Christmas album to, like, trick the system. No, actually, the reason why we did that is because we're actually raising money. And this kind of goes with our whole, like, activism through our whole lives, but mm-hmm. every time we put on shows or, you know, even for our first album, we'll do, like, portions of proceeds into something that has to do with children or, homeless centers or stuff like that. So we raised actually a lot of money off that Christmas album for a homeless center and a children's reading facilitation group, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. But we did that because we have huge families and they were like, we really want like a Christmas album. So we're like, okay. So that was our first one, but we really like nobody knows about that. That doesn't like exist, you know, only like the first people in 2006 like know that. But our official first EP is called Smile. And that was when we're the Bergamot. So in college, we created the Bergamot and that was after 3 months of trying to find a name. My husband found that name. And actually, the reason why I make this a point to say that is because my names were so terrible. Like, don't ask me to name your cat, your parrot, your car. I have no, like, I just, it's not. Yeah. What?
Could you give some examples of the original names that you were coming up with? Just for posterity's sake, so we know how what to compare it to with the Bergamot?
Oh, God. All right, I'm going to tell you probably the most embarrassing one. Okay, there's two that come to mind. One was called Backing Forward. And the other one was called Mr. and Mrs. Particular. They're so bad. So bad.
You know, so as band name goes, those aren't the best ones I've heard.
No, they're the worst. No, glad. Don't be nice. Tell me. They're terrible.
The Backing Forward ones, I was like, okay. Well, I mean, so.
You actually tried to think about.
I am. Okay, I'm trying to like.
Mind you, I'm probably a little bit better now. That was like 2008-09.
Okay.
So you know, I'd like to say I'm a little bit more cultured now. I've been to all 50 states. I've toured internationally. But yeah, no, don't ask me to name anything.
That's okay. Those are the band names that I was in and we came up with aren't any better. So I think that was just.
We'll just lay those to rest.
Exactly.
We'll just lay them to rest. But the cool thing is the actual word bergamot, mm-hmm. it is derived from the bergamot fruit bearing tree in Calabria, Italy. Mm-hmm. And they take the bergamot orange, it's a citrus orange, and they extract the oil from the rind and use it as an essential oil to induce happiness and relieve stress.
Wonderful.
So we actually have a line of bergamot organic perfumes. That's another entrepreneur thing that we have.
That's great. Do you also make, I've heard a lot of like, was it like bergamot tea? Do you make a tea out of it?
Okay, yes. Earl Grey tea is bergamot tea. And that is the oldest known tea to mankind that most popular tea brought over by England. So now you know, bergamot.
It's all coming together now.
It's all just magically.
Mm-hmm. So you formed this band in college. What were you studying in college?
Oh, gosh. I was studying. So I double majored in media and public communications and interpersonal communications with a peace and conflicts minor.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. So the trick was in order to graduate, you had to be able to say that perfectly.
That sounds about right. And then, so what was your, so I'm guessing because you went to college for this, that the music was that more of like a thing you were doing on the side and not a career? So what was your career, or was at that time anyway, what was your career supposed to be?
So, unbeknownst to our parents, this was always the career.
Oh,
we had like set out a long time, like once we entered into college, we're like, yeah, you know, we have to get like a degree to like you know, go to college and like have a backup plan. But we mm-hmm. always had been planning on doing music. We just didn't talk about it with our parents. And then once we both graduated, so I graduated with that, and Nathaniel graduated with a double major in accounting and finance with a music minor, which was super helpful because, you know, we ended up starting our own record label in 2011 called Both Records. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of take care of all like the PR, marketing, anything that has to do with setting up meetings, people, communication. He does anything that has to do with like, tech stuff, recording, analysis, taxes, finances, making sure everything's paid on time. So it's like we see our company, our record label as a farm, which actually does go back into Indiana. Mm-hmm. So when you own a business or a record label, there's so many facets of it that are important that they get done on time and it's organized. But the whole goal is to like, you know, push out something. So all teams on the farm are pushing out a crop, right? So they're pushing out corn or potatoes. Mm-hmm. For us, everything we do on my side of the farm and on his side of the farm, we're pushing out great content and music and, you know, touring, so new dates and stuff like that. But we both, you know, early on, we didn't have the setup and it was actually very complicated because then we were both like, oh, we didn't know what our strengths were. And I think identifying what our, okay, it's very clear now, you know, this is me, this is you, my strengths are people, and songwriting and performing, your strengths are, you know, more techie stuff and, you know, financial business, you know, I don't, not necessarily business, just like numbers. He's like a real accountant, you know?
Yeah.
So then we merged these, we kind of blended these two where we met in the middle, where we're both songwriters and performers. And so that's very, I think that was a helpful thing for us because in the beginning, like we were like, oh, where do we fit or how do we do this? It's all very clunky. There's no roadmap for this.
Right.
You know, you learn as you, we call it failing forward. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, it's very fortuitous that both of you have these strengths that are different, like there are different, but also then you meet together in the middle and that you just happen to meet each other and are able to then use both of your strengths that work harmoniously as an actual company. I like that you keep on describing your brand, your band as a company.
It's, yeah.
I've only ever heard Bon Jovi describe it like that, which is interesting. I don't spend a lot of time with musicians, but if you watch his documentary, he is like, this is like this, the two different sides of him are the music side, musician Bon Jovi. And then there's Bon Jovi, the CEO of a company,
yeah,
talking about how he's got, you know, employees and people that he needs to feed. And it's very interesting to think about that way.
Well, we say, so we have employees as well. And, you know, our whole concept is we think of everything, I guess we really are Midwest at heart, but, you know, gathering around a table and everyone needs to bring a dish to the table and pass it around for this to be thriving and sustainable. Mm-hmm. So the people that we hire on to do projects or consultants or whatever it is, you know, we first tell them, we said, how do you work with teams? And, you know, what's your attitude like? And are you willing to bring, you know, not just eat from the table. This is about bringing to the table. What can you bring to the table? What can you share with the company and how we're running things to make this the grandest version of our greatest selves? Mm-hmm. And so kind of, you know, as far as business goes, you know, mentioning Bon Jovi, I think is important because if you are looking at Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Jay-Z, those are mega brands. If you break it down, they are creating content that's revolving around the music. It's very important. The music has to be amazing first because that's where you're going to draw in your tribe and your super fans. But then from there, it's like, how do you continue to push this out? What are you doing in the meantime? The Roots, he has the drummer for The Roots. He is, he's amazing. He teaches at NYU. He has 11 all the time. He has 11 streams of revenue going.
Oh, wow.
And it's a lot of streams. And from he owns a restaurant to he's an author to, you know, he works at NYU. He's the head house band on the Jimmy Fallon show, on and on. He does DJ sets and blah, blah, blah. I mean, this guy, he is a genius. He came out with this book and it kind of describes it all. He came out with it 2 years ago, but, and so that kind of changed the way we viewed what we were doing. You know, right now people are consuming so much content, and that's when I was kind of talking about, sometimes I feel like you know, I'm a full-time marketer, but it's not like marketing in like the traditional sense. It's more, you know, how much value can I add to our people's lives and beyond. So like everything now is about creating content that adds value to other people's lives. That's like a new form of intentional, meaningful, purposeful marketing where it doesn't feel like you're marketing something because on the other end of it, they're getting really cool stuff and they're like, wow, like you're fostering authenticity, you're building trust, you're creating a really beautiful, authentic brand where people feel really natural with it, where it doesn't feel like, hey, do this for me. Nobody wants to be part of that. I mean, I've been the head director of both of our Kickstarter campaigns, which were both extraordinarily successful. Mm-hmm. The first one, we raised $35,000 for our album Tones, and which dropped this past year. And that was like a dream album. We had Taylor Swift's and Adele's mastering team mastered out of New York City. And we worked with the best producers and the best artists. Wow. So that was amazing. And we actually just today dropped a remix from that album, which is
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, our first remix ever. I'll have to send it to you.
Yes,
it's called Forget About Tomorrow, the remix. An incredible remixer from LA who's like award winning. He did it and he's amazing. But anyway, I mean, you know, in order to do stuff on Kickstarter successfully, you know, people think you throw up an idea in a video and all these people flood into you.
Wait, you mean it doesn't work like that?
Come on. It honestly, the Kickstarters are some of the most it's the most challenging projects I've ever worked on in my entire life. Mm-hmm. They're all or nothing. And you, first off, well, now with Facebook, like things have changed so much when they sold out to go public. So as a business, you know, bands are under a business page, a Facebook page. So everything now is a paid for post because they're making money on stock market. So it made things very, you know, it's making things very challenging. So you have to find really creative ways to reach your fan base, in an authentic and non-pushy way. So yeah, and every day for, you know, it was 30 days in a row or 40 days in a row for the first Kickstarter, 30 days in a row, for the second, which we raised $18,000 for this current tour, that the Unity Collective tour. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's wild because you're just every day for hours. I mean, from 9 a.m. to 1, 2 in the morning, you are literally working. You have a few breaks scheduled out, but you're just inviting people into the process and you're getting more no's than yeses, but all the yeses, you know, count up to what hitting a goal. So you just got to keep going, you know?
That's great. I'm curious with all the, so how did you learn in detail about running Kickstarter campaigns I'm curious about the evolution of the business side of your band and your brand. So how did you do all that? I guess I'm guessing you didn't learn everything in college. I'm sure it's evolved
no.
in some kind of way.
No, I mean, I think college obviously helps because you're around minds that are pushing what you're used to. Mm-hmm. The big thing for me that I just remember, so the two greatest tips I can give to anybody is if you're trying to get into something and you want to eventually be the best person you know in that field of whatever marketing or music or whatever, I have to do both because that's where we're all at right now as independent musicians. Go find the smartest brains in the universe. Go find their blogs and their books and read them. Take what they're teaching and apply it into what you're doing. And then while you're doing that, go find people in your community who are successful, own successful marketing companies. Set up a meeting with them to talk to them. Tell them, you know, who you are, what you're doing. I have another meeting tomorrow. We have a massive show coming up on October 22nd, and it is the grand finale show for the 50-state Unity Collective Tour, which was a tour that spreads a message of unity, not only through our music, but we invited everybody to sign our car, which is known as the Unity Car, with their message of unity.
Oh, wonderful.
So thank you. And so that's like our big grand finale, but I'm actually going to be meeting with a in our hometown of South Bend, but we had to bring it back.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm guessing, is that at the Morris? Is that what you're playing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, congratulations.
Thanks.
Big event. I saw Counting Crows there last.
Really?
in the late 90s. Yeah, Cunning Crows came and played there.
Yes, it's going to be a huge event. It's going to be amazing. And we, so like one of the things I'm doing even in preparation for this, because I feel like when you're starting to get into business and understanding things, there's all, you can always forever know more. You never can know enough. It's always changing. So I'm actually, I have a meeting with a, marketing person from the area just to talk over some things that I've been strategizing about, mostly in, direct, marketing into brand new subsets of people. So reaching them effectively. And I've been doing a lot of research, and you would be surprised at how much stuff you can literally find when you start asking the right questions. So always think, you know, every problem is figure outable. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're getting creative on what questions you're asking and putting out there into the world, and then keeping your eyes open, you're going to find a lot more answers, and people will come to you that you didn't even know, or they'll say something, you're like, oh yeah, that totally answers that question.
Yeah. I'm curious about your Unity tour. So how did the idea come about? How, since you're at the end of it now, how was it? Cause it's been most of your year, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Like the whole year. So mm-hmm. essentially, it was a multi-phased idea, but it all kind of came in a blast of lightning on like a random day. I think it was like October 18th of last year.
Okay.
So the car that is now the Unity car, that's covered in positivity and uniting messages, it has 305,000 miles on it, and it has broken down on us on the road, on close to a dangerous road before. So it was getting to the point where everyone was starting to ask, like, hey, like, you know, maybe it's time to let it go and, you know, think of something new, or, you know, anyway, so that was kind of going on, and, you know, we like blue booked it, and we're like, oh, it's like worth like $1,000. This is so sad. So we're like, well, we can't sell it really. I mean, you could, but we've done all like a lot of our big tours in it. So anyway, my husband just like looked at me, his grandfather just died. So we drove in from New York City to go to the funeral, and it was a couple of days after, and he just looked at me and he was like, you know what? I feel like, he's like, I've got it. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I know what we're going to do with the car. I was like, okay, tell me. And he was like, okay, we're going to take the car. We're going to have all of our fans sign it. We're going to take it on tour, and we're going to have everybody sign it. And it's going to be about like love or something, because he's like, next year's like a big year for like, it's going to be a crazy year in America for the campaigns. And he's like, and then I was like, yeah, like it'll be like our campaign for like love, and like, we'll do music and we'll do this. Anyway, so it started with that. Then it went into like, oh my gosh, yes. Like, let's do it about unity. Like, what do we believe in as like a band? We're like, okay, unity. We'll call it the Unity Collective. We'll make a documentary. We're going to go to all 50 states. So it just kept growing and growing. We're like, we're going to get all these people to sign it. Then we're going to take the car and we're going to auction it off for Memorial Children's Hospital, because they didn't have a music therapist there for the kids. And one of the things we like to do when we come home over Christmas and Thanksgiving is we go into the children's hospital and play for the kids.
Oh,
so we've been doing this since 2012. We'd go to Bloomington, Mott Children's Hospital in Ann Arbor. So it's like something that's near and dear to us. And so we're like, yes, we'll auction the car for the children's hospital and help raise money to bring on a full-time music therapist. So it's like not only fulfilling multiple levels of our dreams of like spreading music and and building community, but we're able to give back in like a really grand way.
Mm-hmm.
So it literally like was like boom. And then once you started rolling, it was like this and this and this. And then, that week we drove back to New York, shot the video for the Kickstarter campaign, started the campaign in October. It ended right before like Thanksgiving. The funds deposited in our account like the last week of December, and we hit the road January 2nd.
Wow.
And we have been on the road touring to all 50 states, every state with the car for I think I don't even know how many days now. I lost track. 39 weeks, 40 weeks. So it's remarkable, the human spirit of Americans, even in such like a divisive time between so many people, and how music and collaboration can build this really authentic community. It's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. That must be amazing to see. I'm curious on, so how do you book, so do you book your events? Do you have a booking agent? How does that work? Especially with this tour where you're constantly moving. How did
right.
that, how the, yeah, facility on that one.
Oh my God. It was insane. It was all hands on deck with that many dates, with hundreds of dates in all the cities, like the big cities and like small cities and who everywhere in between. Mm-hmm. We brought on people, we hired people to help us. I was doing booking. My husband was, our manager was booking. We're on an agency. They were helping book. We partnered up with big brands like Marriott Hotels for Hotel Renaissance. They were booking us across because they believed in the messages. Gorin Brother Hat Shop out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. They have hat shops everywhere. So we partnered up and we played shows, I mean, everywhere.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy. I don't think you ever do understand what you're getting yourself into until you're literally doing it every day. Mm-hmm. So it was the most incredible experiential tour of my entire life. I mean, the people we met, the things we saw, the music that we wrote, the music we played, I would say that our also playing every day, our craft continued to just refine, our brains just kept expanding. So we're getting ready to, this next spring, we're going to be recording, a new album with the new songs, but we're actually getting ready tonight to go lay down demos of those so we can start, you know, shopping at producers and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So
what would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
I would say the best advice I ever received is there is always more where that came from. And this is a very interesting piece of advice because mm-hmm. So, with that, you can either come at your life from a place of scarcity or abundance. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to be happy, abundance could actually not necessarily mean, it could mean monetary abundance. It could mean relationship abundance. It could mean joy abundance, whatever your desire is. But if you're looking at your life and you're focusing on really amazing things and you have goals and you believe in yourself and you're positive, you know, that will grow and there will be more where that came from. But on the other hand, if you're focusing on, oh, you know, my life sucks, I'm never going to go anywhere, this isn't going well, I'm not good enough, I'll never be this, then you're going to continue to get more of where that came from and you'll go down and down and down or be more depressed, or whatever. So it's like, That's like one of the all-star things. And it's the same with money too. Like when you swipe your, you know, card or you're paying for something in cash, instead of being like, oh man, like, oh no, I only got that money. Like hope I get more. Just be like, oh, there's always more that came from.
Mm-hmm.
So like coming from a place of abundance.
Mm-hmm. No, that's one. That's actually a very beautiful way to think about things like that. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So I know that our time is coming to an end. So if the listeners would like to find out more about you and your tour and what you're up to, what's the best way they can do that?
They can do that off of just thebergamot.com. So it's thebergamot.com. That's the hub for everything. You can find all of our links, the Unity Collective tour. That'll take you. There's a hashtag called hashtag Unity for All. They'll click on that. It'll take them into the whole tour and videos. We released a video a week for 39 weeks so they can go back to the beginning and kind of learn who we are, see the journey unfold. It was an insane journey. We're making a documentary that'll release next year, also authoring books and coming out with a new album. So a full plate, but we're ready for the challenge.
Oh, wow. That's great. Okay, definitely. I will put that in the show notes so they can just go directly into that.
Awesome.
Well, Jillian, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for chatting with me and talking all things South Bend. It's been fun.
Yes, it was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on the show. And of course, anyone in South Bend this month of October on the 22nd, you can meet me in person after the show at the Morris.
Perfect. I'll tweet this out to a lot more South Bend people. So hopefully we can get more people at the Morris. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Of course, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Advance Your Art Podcast. If you truly enjoy this, please head over to iTunes and download additional interviews, as well as hit the subscribe button so that as new episodes come out, they will automatically go to your phone. Also, while you're there, please give us a 5-star rating, which helps our iTunes rankings. If you'd like to see more information, head on over to advanceyourart.com, where you can find information about each of the guests, as well as projects that I am working on. And always, if you're in the Boston area, please feel free to reach out. I can be found on Twitter at YCataldo, or you can email me, Yuri@advanceyourart.com. Thank you so much, and have a great day.